Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction's Patreon, I Call BS, episode 42.
Bobby, we know it was a big issue on our episode earlier this week that we lost a Patreon.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get these episodes. So what kind of security protocol do we have to make sure that we don't have any unwanted listeners to this episode? We don't have anybody trying to learn for free.
Literally zero security precautions. I let Patreon handle that. We just put out the episode itself. However, I do have a guy who is like a Liam Neeson type guy. And if I figure out that somebody is creeping on the feed, I send that guy after him. And let me just say, it's pretty excessive. Like, given the crime committed, it's excessive punishment.
he hooks you up to the light power source for the house and just leaves it running.
Yeah, exactly. And the guy's like, I mean, I get that I did something wrong in like pirating some Science Faction episodes, but should it really cost me my fertility and one of my nuts? You know, I feel like I feel like this is a little bit too steep.
My intestinal lining, no. I'm imagining that scene where Liam Neeson is saying, I will find you, and you just hear, instead of good luck, it's get her done.
Oh, and speaking of the guy who gets it done, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. If you're get her done, then I'll take Jeff Foxworthy. You might be hosting a science podcast if you only have 12 Patreons.
Congratulations, we're millionaires with no morals.
Only, God damn it.
We're fucking Mussolini and Tojo. Like, we might not have started World War II ourselves, but we have a lot of blood in our past.
We also pale in comparison to Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, which would be the Adolf Hitler. That's right. Stephen Novella is Adolf Hitler.
You went there before I did, but I would have agreed with you 100%. I was going to say it. Sooner or later, we were all thinking it. Somebody was going to say it.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is Joseph Mengele or something. I don't know.
And of course, we will not be promoting ivermectin in this episode either. Okay, let's get right on to I Call BS.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
Maybe we won't promote it, but can we do some like sort of ivermectin challenge where like I have to like eat a pie made of ivermectin like in under 5 minutes? Or the meal is free? I don't know.
I think that's just Kansas dinner nowadays. But like
that's at a Kansas COVID clinic. It's just...
The good news is that Kansas clowns are well protected because they can do a lot of the pies to the face.
They have a strong union over there. I'm picturing some 400-pound guy in overalls raising his hand again as he wins the third ivermectin pie-eating contest of the day. He's blind, by the way, now.
Oh, dear. Article number one. New research suggests that the coronavirus jumped from animals to humans two separate times in China in 2019, totally upturning our understanding of the origins of the pandemic. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. The virus jumped twice, each time hoping to inhabit the species. Damn it. With whatever quantum leap analogy. Yes, it is the virus keeps leaping a la quantum leap.
Did you just... Hold on. I want to know if your joke writing is getting so lazy that you just said, like, basically, insert quantum leap joke here.
First off, I have not seen an episode of Quantum Leap and heard that intro since I was, like, 9 years old. I was going from memory. I've done a lot of drugs, Bobby. So
most of it being ivermectin pies.
God, I can't see. My stomach hurts so much.
Damien, this is science, though it hasn't been published yet and is therefore still unconfirmed, but if found to be true, it will completely wipe out the lab leak theory and possibly give us an idea of where exactly this all originated. So this particular article looks at the two main lineages of early SARS-CoV-2 infections in China, A lineage and B lineage. Here's a quote from Nature from this article. Lineage B has become the dominant lineage globally and includes samples taken from people who visited the Hunan seafood market in Wuhan, which also sold wild animals. Lineage A spread within China and includes samples from people linked to other markets in Wuhan. So, the issue is, did one lineage arise from the other? Because if so, then there was a single entry point from animals into humans in that spillover event, as previously thought, and we're just right back to normal. But if there are two separate spillovers from two different animals, which is what it's starting to look like, then the accidental lab leak hypothesis is essentially squashed, because it shows a situation in which two separate infections from animals to humans happened. The article is yet to be peer-reviewed, and there's still some wiggle room right now in terms of whether we'll be able to tell soon if there were two separate spillovers or not. Some say the original samples are needed to make that determination, and they may not even exist anymore, while others think it's a matter of time before we solve the genetic question. Regardless, if it turns out that that did happen from two separate animals, meaning the virus came from two separate origin points of those animals and spilled over into humans, then it means that we're almost certainly dealing with a completely natural event. And also, it might give us an idea of how these things spread and help us fight the next one. Very, very, very interesting. For something that's been studied more than anything else on Earth for the past year, surprises keep coming.
Ziggy says you have to cause a pandemic if you want to leap.
Article number two. Firefighters racing to protect the giant sequoias from the California wildfires are trying a new approach to protecting the trees, encasing them in a fireproof gel that solidifies into a rock-hard fireproof crust. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. That gel is napalm, and we're using that for more controlled burns. We're using that to get all the leaves that we should have vacuumed up.
Yeah, that's right.
Off the floor. If you just burn it up.
Well, so they drop the napalm. Wouldn't that then also start the fires that they are trying to avoid?
I think it's, you know, hey, nature, you can't burn down our forests if we burn them down. I think it's a kind of a we're taking control of our own destiny as Californians. Bobby, we have to napalm something. We have napalm that's, the stuff expires. What are we going to do? Just not napalm something?
Oh, Damien, this is bad science. But what they did do is wrap it in fireproof aluminum blankets, which is a first and kind of post-apocalyptic. We've actually lost a lot of the great sequoias to fire and wind in the last few years, trees that are hundreds, if not thousands of years old. Firefighters are trying to stop that from happening to General Sherman, the largest tree by volume on Earth, as well as some of the surrounding giants. Sequoias have a natural resistance to fire, but that resistance has its limits. And hot wildfires, especially big hot ones, can overcome that natural resistance. So firefighters are doing everything to save these old creatures for future generations, including controlled burns and brush clearing.
Napalm.
And they are wrapping them in blankets. They are not doing the gel thing. By the way, P.S., the gel that solidifies hard as rock would likely kill a tree, so listeners, please don't invent that.
Yeah, that was my my actual reasoning wasn't I thought napalm would work. I was like, no, that would kill a tree. I'm pretty sure that would... Because what are you going to do, have the convicts go chisel an entire fucking sequoia from this stuff?
Oh, dear. Article number three. For the first time ever, a preemptive treatment for children at risk of ASD has shown to be effective at preventing an autism diagnosis later in life. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. The benefits of train and counting toothpicks before they hit the ground therapy has worked wonders in the stereotypical autism community.
I love that literally 100%. You've been doing this show for 8 years, and 100% of your autism knowledge comes from a 1980s movie with Tom Cruise.
No. That Rain Man didn't love trains. I picked that one up later.
Okay.
Rain Man loved cars. He overestimated his driving ability.
Damien, this one is science, and it's very interesting. So since autism diagnoses are usually made at a few years old at the earliest, it's been hard to study early intervention that would take place years before that, but we know early intervention with other issues, especially neurological issues, is the most effective means. So these researchers wanted to study kids who were years away from even being diagnosed. To do that, the researchers picked a group to study that already showed early signs of pre-autism spectrum symptoms. Everything from eye contact issues to problems responding to their own names. They divided the group into activation and control groups. The control groups went around their regular life, while the activation group received 10 taped in-home visits from a specially trained therapist. The videos of these sessions were then reviewed, and the therapist made a plan for each family to address the unique needs of each child. They did this by, like, looking over the videotape and seeing how the interaction worked. The families were then followed up with until all the children in both groups were around 3 years old and were officially tested for ASD. In the control group, which, if all things were done right, should represent the baseline percentage of autistic kids in the overall group, showed 21% of kids receiving an ASD diagnosis. I want to stop and remind people, it's not that 21% of all kids would develop ASD. They picked a group of kids who already showed pre-ASD. So 21% of those kids received an ASD diagnosis. The treatment group, 7%. Seven. One third. This is huge. It's fucking gigantic. We still need bigger N numbers, but this is what we've been waiting for in terms of autism prevention and early interventional research. We literally have zero things that show effectiveness for autism in this type of fashion for early intervention. This is the first, and it's one we knew was around. It just took a long time to set up the actual study to find a way to show that it works. We should expect a slew, a fucking stampede of studies to come out soon, especially with all the funding that goes to ASD. Expect a ton of studies to come out that look at different modifications to this intervention, when it can be done, how early you can do it, different types that work better or worse. But what I think we are going to see is in communities where there is awareness of it, we are going to see a dropping of ASD diagnosis.
NASA headquarters?
Yeah, that, or, you know, like if you're older parents, my wife and I think about this, we're older, we're in our mid to late 30s, you know, you think about that when you have kids, it puts them at higher risk of ASDs. You know, obviously, I'm already spectrumy as is, so they already got that working against them. So, like, if you're in those communities, these types of interventions might be a regular thing in the future, and we might be looked at like, man, you guys wasted so much potential of so many people who had autism and could have been helped, and you didn't do it because you didn't have the science early enough, and now you do. So,
well, we had to chase down this vaccine thing for like 2 decades.
That's true. So. Do you remember the other day you accused me of farming out the writing of the show to... Who did you say I did it to?
Yes, Mr. Chuck Palahniuk.
Uh-huh. I look at Mr. Palahniuk as somebody who's probably in my camp of, like, I've heard some interviews with him. Like, I think he's probably got a little bit, he's probably a little spectrum-y. He's probably on there. Would you think you'd agree?
Yeah. I've read a couple of his books, and it would surprise me if a person on who wasn't on the spectrum wrote Haunted.
So, it's true, and a lot of the other ones. So, here's my thing. Would we like a world with less autism if it also means that we don't get the book Choke? Like, are we willing to give up Fight Club for that?
I mean, honestly, you say I only know 2 stereotypes about autism. I know a third, and I left it out. Oddly enough, it's the one that's complimentary, is that people with autism are great at certain forms of math, upper-level math that puts men on the moon.
Yes. Okay, fair enough. Oh, dear. Article number 4. 64 of the endangered jackass penguins who starred in the Netflix documentary Penguin Town were found dead in South Africa from what appears to be stray gunshots attributed to a nearby gang shootout. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. The jackass penguins actually died. One of them, at a car wreck.
Yep.
The jackass.
One was in a shopping cart that went over a hill.
Yes. A couple drug overdoses for the jackass penguins. Also, because they age differently, you know, turns out a lot of their lives were cut short due to their foolish pranks in their youth.
Damien, this is bad science.
Woo!
They did find 64 endangered jackass penguins dead in South Africa from bee stings. That's right. Apparently a bunch of South Africans...
The gangs are using bees? Oh my God, Bobby.
They're loading their guns with bees.
And when they shoot bees.
That's right. Apparently a bunch of South African bees basically my-girled 64 endangered penguins. Hey, American celebrities, still think we have too few bees?
And these are the Africanized bees. They don't fuck around, right?
Well, they're just African bees. That's quite offensive that you said Africanized.
No, I meant they were European bees that went and appropriated African bee culture.
And wearing bee dreadlocks.
Yeah, African bees would never have fucked with the penguins. Only European bees who are frontin' would do something like that.
A fucking bee put huge rims on that Oldsmobile.
That bee is trying way too hard.
Oh, Oh, that's great. And guess what? Let me count this up. I think this might be a first time ever.
Not true. Not true. One, I got a perfect little bit ago, two, but two perfects, I'll take it.
This is four questions right. And Damien has, for the first time in 8 solid years of weekly competition, Damien has won a game of I Call BS. I feel sorry for that poor bastard who canceled his subscription right before this, because he's probably been listening nonstop, just waiting for Damien to win. Damien finally wins now. He's lost his Patreon.
Okay, so first off, I won just like I think 2 weeks ago, but
no, you didn't, and this is a really bad look.
Acknowledging
for you.
This one, just because you want to spite an ivermectin defending cousin fucking Patreon.
No, it's because
Patreon
you finally won. You literally won for the first time. I'm celebrating you. Why are you trying to take this away from us?
Okay, I'm not. I'm just going to cautiously ask you to proceed with the episode.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, audience, for joining us for. Oh wait, hold on.
I have to just start turning off the recording.
Hold on. I'm conferring here with the judges, and it does seem...
You're the judge. You're the only judge.
Disputed. But it does seem as if right before your final answer, you may have referenced a Chuck. Was that right?
Yes, Mr. Palahniuk. Yes. I helped you.
Chuck. Famously the name of the third and after the first season missing Cunningham child who walked up the stairs holding his basketball in season 1 and never came back down.
You piece of shit.
I'm the piece. You're the one who could make any reference they wanted. Any reference on earth. And all you have to do, you have one simple rule. Don't make Happy Days references. Same as every single game show. Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, everybody's got the same rule. And yet you insist on continually making them and complaining as if you didn't know. Did you not know about the rule this time, Damien? Are you going to claim you didn't know about the Happy Days rule? Because you claim that all the time. Oh, I didn't know about the rules.
I helped you answer a question.
You made up rules.
You didn't know who the author of Choke was.
You made up rules. Oh no! Did you know the rule? You knew the rule about Happy Days references. You made a reference that specifically called out Richie's older brother, Chuck Cunningham, from Happy Days, needlessly. It was an unforced error.
I grew up with cable. I don't even know that. By the way, sure, I was Damien. Thinking the whole sure. time, like, how is Bobby going to do it? And I thought, here's what I had. I was like, oh man, I wrote down in a card. I was hoping to psychic you. And it was, Bobby's going to say that Henry Winkler tried out for the Quantum Leap role. And I would have known that.
That would have been reaching. All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction's Patreon, episode 42, where you learned all about how the coronavirus might have jumped from animals to humans twice. How firefighters are racing to protect giant sequoias from the California wildfires. How, for the first time ever, a preemptive treatment for children at risk of ASD has shown to be effective at preventing an autism diagnosis later in life. And how 64 of the endangered jackass penguins from the Netflix documentary were found dead in South Africa from bee stings. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 580.
I'm an African penguin, and this is Beehive Soccer Ball.
You've been listening to Science Function. Wait, that's not right.